Again, to summarize, this is the parak of the Givonim. There's a famine in Israel. Hashem says this is about the Givonim. David goes to the Givonim, and they want revenge on Shaul because he killed the Givonim. Not clear where that happened. We assume this is somehow connected to the destruction of Nov, which is where the Mishkan was, because that's where the Givonim were. They were, since the time of Yeshua, kind of like the Levim are dedicated to the service of the Mishkan, of the Mikdash. So to the Givonim were dedicated service to the Mishkan, Mikdash. They're kicked out of that. Either they're actually killed, or the Gemara says, no, they simply lost their source of livelihood. Malbim says they were ended up as really second-class citizens, oppressed throughout Israel. And now Hashem's saying, you need to appease them. And they want revenge. And this is the way Levinas puts it. Do admire the savage good greatness of this text, whose extreme tension may, in my summary, poorly conveyed, because he summarizes it just as poorly as I do. Its theme is clear, but the necessity of talion. Talion here is the principle of literally mida keneged mida, that punishment should be equivalent to the offense committed, that someone dies, there needs to be a death to avenge that. That's the only sort of justice that's possible. And it's, which is shedding of blood brings about whether one wants it or not, that sense of injustice that needs to be somehow appeased, that exists. And the greatest of all was called the Old Testament consists remains sensitive to spill blood and being incapable of refusing this justice to whoever cries out for vengeance. In feeling the horror of the prank granted by proxy, when the right to forgive belongs only to the victim. And that's his bottom line from all of this, is that we can't tell, Bnei Yisrael can't tell the Givonim, get over it. The right to forgive belongs to the victim. And so that is what he sees in the Hashem is telling David, that the justice happens, you need to talk to those who were oppressed. You need to talk to the victims here. And that's what you need to make it better. You can't just make up a rule and say, okay, it's better now.
But in Jewish law, we actually have changed it over.
Yes, we were going to talk about that. And that's going to be Levinas's point here, is that right here, we need to respect that in terms of the victim. But as victims, we have responsibilities as well. Okay? That the victim of an injustice can't demand that revenge. And that's what he ends up with, this kind of dialectic, that the that David can't tell the Givonim, this is how to accept our apology, then you can go on and forgive, we will make it up, and that's it. On the other hand, what the Givonim do is fundamentally wrong. David can't deny it to them, but it's still wrong, and that's not what Judaism is all about. And hopefully we'll at least start that idea just in time for Yom Kippur. We're just going to look at this again. This is the point from the Givonim. Levinas isn't done here. Look at the way that the text says, right? That Pshat says, Shaul hamid the Givonim. And that's something that is a capital crime that can't be appeased by money. That's the halakha, as the Torah puts it. This whole idea of a Goel Hadam is a reality that is true, that the family that is going to, we're going to want that revenge. And it says, "Kol makan nefesh l'fi edim yusach rotzeach." Anyone who commits murder, again, across the witnesses, it's got to be through the system of the courts. The murderer will die. Eidachel lo yaneh b'nefesh lamut. You can't use just one witness. Lo tichu kofer l'nefesh. That's the key point. You cannot take any kind of ransom for the life of nefesh rotzeach, for the life of the murderer, shehu rasha lamut, if he is convicted to die. Kimot yumat. It's somebody demanding that, okay, the person is going to pay money, that'll be his punishment. That's not acceptable. Look, he called for the news, and you cannot take any kind of ransom that he should run to one of the refuge cities. To live until the Kohen dies, like someone who's negligent. That's not what happens here. You should not literally flatter, spoil the land. The land will not accept this. That the land that you're in, the blood this blood will spoil the land. We'll echo back to Cain and Hevel here. All right, so Yechupar l'damashu pachbak im dam shavcho. The land itself will not forgive the blood spilled within it, except with the blood of that who spilled it. Do not contaminate the land that you are living in, that I, Hashem, dwell within it. I dwell within you, and this is what's necessary.
I thought there was a whole thing about not spilling blood in the land of Israel.
It's not a good thing, but if it happens, we need to actually get that. The Torah puts this out. Now, the truth is, the Torah puts lots of limitations on that. But the underlying idea is still this midah keneged midah. Again, we have to kind of move away from it. But that's where we're going to start from. That's what he says.
But Danny, this is an extreme situation, though.
This is extreme. And the Gibonim, it says they're not low. The Pasuk says it. The Gol Mibnei Yisrael Hema. They're not concerned with the halakhic niceties. They don't have witnesses. And the idea of Lo Yamut Avot Al Banim, that the Gibonim are demanding Shaul's children, not Shaul himself, his descendants. Right? We're not saying it's right, but we're saying we understand that, and that the sense of that there's an injustice that something needs to be done here. If it's not, that this will continue on forever. We're going to move on from here. But still, Levinas points out that Hashem respects that the right to forgive belongs to the victim. Again, the way the Bavli puts it, that it was that they didn't actually Shaul didn't kill the Givonim. He just took them away from their position in the Mishkan. The Givonim are more unreasonable. The Givonim are being unjust and demanding the lives of Shaul's descendants. But Hashem demands they to be appeased. So, and what appeasing them does is publicly declaring that, David is saying that we, Bnei Israel, were wrong. We did a justice to the Givonim, and we will pay the whatever price necessary to restore that justice. So that's a Kiddush Hashem from David's point of view, and that's what the Gemara looks at it and says, this ended up being Kiddush Hashem. Even though it was completely wrong, it still ended up being necessary. Kind of a subtle point, something you can only do in Tanakh. I wouldn't say, don't read this here and say, this is halacha, we should go ahead and kill descendants of people just because the victims demand it. At least in terms of the Navi telling us this is a story, this is a message that we should hear. And that's the way the Gemara looks at it. The Gemara has a problem, right? Haktiv, the Torah says, Lo yumtu avot al banim, o banim lo yumtu al avot. Ish bechato yumatu. That children should not die for the sins of the parents. Parents don't die for the sins of the children. Everyone should be accountable for their own sins. How can we let David give over Shaul's descendants for what's apparently the sin of Shaul? Rav Chiya bar Abba, Rav Yochanan, Mutev she'atakir otachat min haTorah. Better that we should uproot a letter of the Torah, lach in the Torah, v'yitkalel shem shemayim b'parhesia, not have a chilul Hashem. But having these good bonim being oppressed, that's a chilul Hashem. Better to overrule this lo yumtu banim alavot. And then Gemara goes on to Haktiv, and it also says, Lo talin nivato ala et, you can't, someone who's put to death for whatever reason, the body should not be hanged on a gallows for display. You can't do that because it violates the Tzelem Elokim. Tzelem Elokim nivrat adam, right? So they did that. So what they did, they hanged these seven descendants, then they stayed up there. We read that from the time of the beginning of the harvest until the rain, so from Pesach till Sukkot, 6 months, these bodies are hanging and rotting. So now I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon by Yad Tzedek, says, Mutev Sheta, Ker Ota Chatman HaTorah, same idea. Better to uproot a law in the Torah, single letter of the Torah, B'Kadesh Shem Shemayim V'Parhesia, and Mishav is Kiddush Hashem. Why is the Kiddush Hashem? Shayu Obrim B'Shavim Omrim, that travelers would come by and see this display in public. And they would say, Mativan Shel Elu, what's the story with this? His body is here. Halo B'nei Melachim Hem. And they told, these were princes. They were the descendants of Shaul, the first king of Israel. Umasu is what they do. What happened? Pashtu yudehem begirim gerurim. They oppressed strangers. Gerurim literally means conspiring, conniving, right? These are the gibonim who basically lied to Bnei Israel initially in order to get that initial treaty with Bnei Israel. So, right? These Bnei Melachim oppressed these gerim gerurim, these strangers who were here illegally anyway, not to make political comments. Amru, and so the people seeing that and said, "Elecha uma shiruili debek bo kazu." These are clearly a great people, Bnei Israel. These are people I want to be part of. Ma bnei melachim keach. That they hold the princes, the elitist, accountable, so too they would hold everyone accountable. That's justice. And that they would take up the case, they would try to do justice for the stranger. Yisrael, their own people, even it's more so. Umiyad. And in that time, 150,000 people, non-Jews, strangers, joined Bnei Israel, converted to Judaism, became part of Israel. They saw that this was an act of justice. That was a Kiddush Hashem. Even above, it violated every rule of the book. It's the act of saying, we respect the right of justice. So Levinas puts it that way. Last question. How were people able, in opposition to the strict prohibition of the Torah, to leave human corpses exposed for many months and to profane the image of God they bear? Same answer. It's better that a letter of the Torah be damaged than the name of God be profaned. The image of God is better honored in the right given to the stranger than in symbols. That's the Kiddush Hashem. Universalism has a greater weight than the particularist letter of the text. Or to be more precise, it bursts the letter apart. That care not to say that we eliminate halacha, but that's underlying truth behind the halacha, for it lay like an explosive within the letter of the law. We have here then a biblical text which the Midrash spiritualizes, interiorizes. Right? Torah doesn't say directly that. So they'll look at this and see that's what the text is saying here. But this is reflecting of the Kiddush Hashem. The preserve is unusual power and harsh truth. David is not able to oppose a victim who cries out for justice, even if his justice is cruel. To the one who demands a life for a life, David answers, I shall give. That's Levinas's interpretation of what's going on here, that this ultimately is a Kiddush Hashem from Bnei Israel's point of view. But, Yivanim lo Bnei Israel hema, Torah says that straight on, because that's not the Jewish answer. We don't like, it's not right. And so that's where Levinas turns to the next side. So we're going to continue on to the next part of this. This is part that Susie really wanted to be here, so maybe we'll do it again. I know, next time we're going to get the shear. But reparation and revenge. Two models for what we do about injustice. Again, if we are the victims, right? We were saying that we have the right to determine what counts, what we need demand for our forgiveness, what counts as undoing an injustice. The two ways to do that. And to look at that, we have to figure out what happens to the Givonim. We have our story, Givonim demand this. David says, fine, I'll give it to you. Seven descendants of Shaul are hanged. They die. And then they disappear from Tanakh. The Givonim disappear from Tanakh.
Givonim did disappear from Tanakh?
Yeah, we never see any mention of Givonim at all later. But that's not, I lied to you. That's not exactly true. The term Givonim doesn't apply. So to stand their fate, we have to learn a halacha. Here's a halacha in the Mishnah talking about marrying into Bnei Israel. Amonim movi asurim. Basurin Yisraelah. You know, Torah says that Amon Moab, even if they convert to Judaism, they cannot become part of Bnei Israel. They cannot marry in. Their descendants remain separate.
I thought after so many generations, they could be.
No, that's what Torah says, right? Egyptians, three generations, etc. that even to the 10th generation, halakha is they cannot. But women, this is only talking about men, women can. Whole story of Ruth, who's from Moab. Okay, Ruth can become part of Jewish people, a male Moabite cannot. That's its own story. We're not going to talk about that right now, but the Mishnah continues. Mamzerin, bastards, illegitimate children come from an arayot, the netinin, and the netinin, and someone who's a netin will have to translate asurin, but isurin, osrin, isra'ola. They have the same problem. They can be Jewish, but they cannot marry into the Jewish people. They're not part into the community. They're not part of the Jewish community. Echad zacharim, echad nekeva. That's true for men and women. If you're for moms there, that's a problem, and halacha deals with that. And the netin. The netin cannot marry imperially, men or women. They are completely excluded from the Jewish people. So what are netinin? What does it mean to be a netin? That's from Ezra. Ezra, after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the beginning of Ezra describes the return to Eretz Yisrael, Shivat Zion, under Koresh, and it goes through long lists of everybody's names and everybody's families. That's what Ezra is all about. These are the people who came. Excuse me. Who returned from the exile? Shehagladim Nebuchadnezzar, Melch Babel, Babel. These right after 70 years, they came back from the exile of Babel. Yeshuv Yerushalayim, Yehuda Ish to Yiro, and they came back from Yerushalayim to Yerushalayim and Yehuda. Everyone came back to their city that where their family came from. And long list. This is Pasuk Aleph. Now we're going to go down to Pasuk Gimel, Pasuk 43. Later, Nitinim. The Nitinim came back as well. And there were B'nai Tzichia, B'nai Shushva, B'nai Tavot, a long list of names of Netinim, which doesn't help us. They came back, but they still, they couldn't marry in. That doesn't tell us who Netinim are. Then in Ezra Chet, which is describing the generation later when Ezra leads the second return, also has a long list of everybody's names who came. And here we have more Netinim. And that tells us something more. This is Perachet min haNetinim, and of those who were Netinim, Shenatan David v'Asarim, that David and the leaders had put aside. They were Natan. They were given. Lavodat haLevi'im, to serve the Levi'im, Netinim, there are 220 of them. Kulam nikvu b'shemot, all listed by names, and you can look at Ezra for their names. So that Netinim are those who were given by David to serve. And the Mepharshim explained, that's what Netinim are. They were the Givonim, Ibn Ezra. Netinim heim Rashi Givon, Ubenotea. Those are the descendants of Givon and its suburbs. Yehoshua Natnam Levet Elokav. And they were Netinim. They were literally given over to be the Chotvei Tzim, Shovei Mayim, to serve in the Mikdash. Valkenikru Netinim. Alpishanam Anamrachat. That David says. What do you mean? David did that? Is Yoshua from the time of Yoshua? What do you mean? David had set them aside, had given them to the service of the Avoda. That David restored them. We learn this as that Shaul had taken them out of that role when he destroyed the Mishkan and Nov. Ezra is telling us that David brought them back. Okay, besides this incident with the seven descendants of Shaul, they served in the Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan, again, when David restored them to that role. So they were in the team that David set aside, Avot HaLevi'im, right? And Nikru'u min hayam ahu Netinim, and they called them Netinim from that day on. Nikudim hayu Nikru'im Givonim. Before they were called Givonim, now they had this. And sort of another role that was said, no, publicly you are now back to that role as servants of the Mishkan. Okay. So then, if that's the case, why are they forbidden to marry into Klal Yisrael? They would say, okay, you're back. Now what? So the Rambam goes into this. This is basically from the Gemara. So source 5. That a convert from the Canaanite nations, even though the Torah says they have to be wiped out, But actually, if they convert, even if they just accept the Shiva Mispay Noach, Ein Asurim in a Torah Lebo Bakahal, but if they convert to Judaism, they can join, they're fully accepted. Wiping out the Canaan, that doesn't mean killing them, it means ending their culture. They accept Yadut, then they're fine, they can marry in, they're complete Jews. The Haim and the Karim Nitinim, but those who are called the Nitinim, defined Nam Labodat and Mikdash, those who are dedicated to the serving of the Mikdash. But David Begazar Aleihem, so David restores them to that role, but establishes a decree. So you can sue Bakahala Olam, that they cannot join Bnei Yisrael ever, even at any point in the future, the Nitinim can never join the community. Loma Gazar Aleihem, who they did know, and why did they David establish this Gezerah? Bishara Azut Bachzariut. He saw them as being haughty and cruel. Sheta Behem, this cruelty that they had, this act of demanding Shaul's seven sons. They had no rachamim. That as soon as they did that, yes, David has to say, we have to respect that, but no, you cannot join the community ever again. That's why the halach is an etin. The descendants of Gibeonim cannot join the Jewish community. And the Gemara says, Chana bar Ada Nitinim, David Gazar Alehem, the Gibeonim, David decreed against them that they cannot join the community. Shenemar Vekra Melech Gibeonim, because the Pasuk says that when David calls them, Yomar Alehem, and spoke to them and had this whole story, Vagenib Gibeonim, Lo Bimne Israel Hema, that the Gibeonim were not part of Bnei Israel, and the Gemara reads that not as a statement of fact about the past, but as part of David's statement about the future, is that no, you are not part of Bnei Israel. And the way he looked at it is the following. Amar, David says, source 7, this is Gemara, describing to David's internal thinking. Shlosa simanim yesh ba'um azir, that this people, Bnei Israel, have three signs. The three ways that distinguish, this is what it means to be a Jew. Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomolei Chasadim. They have Rachamim, translated pity, mercy, Baishanim, literally means shame, but we'll see it doesn't really mean that in this context, and Gomolei Chasadim. They do Chesed to others. Rachmanim, we have Psukim that say that, Tiv, Natan Lacha Rachamim, that the Torah says that Hashem will give you Rachamim. This is a gift from God. And Hashem will have rachamim, will have mercy on you, and will make you multiply. And there, by shanim, as it says, that God is coming to test you with this massive display at Har Sinai. That's what by shanim means, that the fear of God should be before you. The by shanim here doesn't literally mean what we normally associate with be embarrassed. It means having Yirat Elokim, awe of God, acknowledging that there is a higher power.
So humility.
I guess humility is a better term, right? We usually translate Bosh as embarrassed, but humility is a better term there, in the sense that there's someone above you at all times. Kids in the office always ask, what's that on your head? Like, the head covered, right? Someone above me at all times. Gomlei Chasadim, what does it mean to be a have Chesed? Tiv, it says, when Hashem is describing Avraham, because I know him, I'm familiar with him. Laman, so that actually it's a vet, banav betov, that he will command his children, his descendants, acharav, b'shamru derech Hashem, they will keep the way of God, lasot tzedakah u'mishpat. That's what gomer chesed means, they're doing tzedakah u'mishpat. Kol yishayesh bo shlosha simanim halalu, that if anyone who has these three signs, if they have rachamim, busha, and du chesed, they should be allowed, it is appropriate that they join this people, Bnei Israel. If you don't have that, then they can't. So the Gibeonim don't have these characteristics, they can't join. Again, these proof texts, it's Natan Ruach HaChamim, that these are gifts that Hashem gave Israel. So, manner of speaking, we only accept those converts who have this imprimatur of God's approval. They have to, before that you accept their converts, you have to show that they have those gifts of Baishanim, they have Yirat Hakim, awe of God, sense of a higher moral authority. Gomel chesed means they do both tzedakah mishpat, doing what's right for others. And then Lemna says, well, what is rachamim? What's the difference between rachamim and chesed? And Israel is supposed to have both of these two things. So Levinas translates this as pity, which doesn't really help. And this is the way Levinas continues. Gemara teaches us more. A verse of the text, the one that says, Givonim lo b'mnei Yisrael, hema b'nei, that Givonim are not part of Bnei Yisrael, indicates to us, seemingly as a simple piece of historical information, Gibeonites were not part of the children of Israel, but of the rest of the Amoraim. To this preliminary verse, Gemara attaches a meaning of a verdict. It is David who had excluded the Gibeonites from the community of Israel and relegated them to the Arameans. To belong to Israel, one must be humble. In other words, place something, which you translate it as humility, place someone or something higher than oneself, one must feel pity and be capable of a disinterested acts. The Gibeonites excluded themselves from Israel by not doing that. So that's why he wants to translate it as his, rachamim is pity and gomel chasim is disinterested act. Okay? And rachamim, he's going to translate, is how we approach this mishpat when we're involved. Gomel chasim is disinterested, and the classic meaning of disinterested meaning not involved. Everyone uses disinterested to mean uninterested, to mean I don't care. It's not that you don't care, it's just that I'm not personally involved. That's why I can do chesed for someone else. That's not rachamim. Rachamim is how I care about the other when they oppose me. The Mishpat says, I have been wronged. You did something wrong to me. You need to do something about the injustice that you did to me. What do I do with that? I'm the victim. That's rachamim. How do I look at that? I got a message too. So that's continuing now. Levinas, what difference is there between pity and generous action? Right, again, what he translates, rachamim gomel chasadim. Strict justice, even if flanked by disinterested goodness and humility, is not sufficient to make a Jew. Chesed is not enough. Justice itself must already be mixed with goodness. And this mixture is indicated by the word rachamim, which we have badly translated as pity. It is that special form of pity which goes out to the one who's experiencing the harshness of the law. That's the idea, is that there is a line of justice. I have dispute. We decide where the line is. You owe me this. I get so far. And that's the line. That's the, in Hebrew, is the Shishurat HaDin, the line of the law. That by being a Rahman, Rachamim Rahmanut, means that I'm willing to give that up, even if it's mine by right. Justice says I go so far. The Fnim Mishurat HaDin is a Hebrew term, within the line of the law. I'm willing to say, no, I'm not going to demand the full justice. I'm willing to give some of that up. The opposite of the idea of beyond, you know, in English, we use it, usually translate the Fnim Mishurat HaDin as beyond the letter of the law. It's almost the opposite of metaphor. This is within. So beyond the letter, going beyond the letter of the law means doing more than required. The Fnim Mishurat HaDin means accepting less than pure justice, giving something up even if it's rightfully mine.
So you're giving something up.
Right. The other side of mishpat. The other side of din. That's what rachamim is. And that's what we talk about with Hashem, is midah rachamim midah hadin. We don't necessarily demand justice. And in fact, going with nim mishpat hadin is required by the Torah. You know, the Torah says, this is the law, and the Torah says, no, don't keep the law. You need to be able to give up. Torah says, and Shemot, Hizartatem et Hukim et Torah, as a Torah, rather, that Hashem tells. Sorry, I'm going to call here. I'll have to answer that at some point. Excuse me. Hashem tells Moshe, you need to tell Bnei Israel about the laws, or about the Torah, Torah, literally two Torahs, right? Torah Shabbat, Torah Shabbat, both datel them, and you need to let them know the derech yikubo, the way they should go, but amaseh sheyasun, the things that they should do. And the Gemara says, what's the difference between the things they should do and the chukim of the Torah? The answer is sheyasun zu lufnim mishrat hadin. talking about this idea of going within Mishrat Adin, not demanding full justice. Similarly, Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael exactly that. You should do that which is good and right in the eyes of God. So that you can inherit the land. This good land that Hashem promised to you. And Yashar Batov, which is right and good in the eyes of God. Zub Shara, this means compromise. And going within the line of Allah. If you don't do that, then you have no right to your Ashtata Aretz. You're not part of, you don't belong in the land. And again, you're not part of Bnei Yisrael. And there's a famous story of Rabbi Bar Hanan, who was a wine merchant, that he hired porters to carry his wine barrels from one warehouse to another, and they get an accident and break the barrels. Rabbi Bar Hanan, Tabrule Hanhu Shekulai, Chavita Dechamra, that the porters that he hired broke his wine barrels of wine. Shakal Gali Maihu, and he demanded that they reimburse him for the wine that had been lost, and he took their coats as a security. Atu Amru L'Rav. So they came to Rav, who was the judge at that point, said Amarle, and they said to Rav, he took our coats. And Rav says back to Rabbi Bar Hanan, Havlu Lehu Gamalaihu, give them back their cloaks. You can't take that. Amar Leis, Rabbi Hanan said, Dina Hachi, is that really the law? I mean, they owe me money. They have to pay me somehow. Amar Lein said yes. Why? Because the Pasuk said, Loman Telech V'Derech Tovim, that's the right thing to do. They may owe you money, but you can't take away their cloaks. They don't have anything else. You can't take their clothes away. Yahiv le Gamalaihu, so he says, fine, give them back their cloaks. He has no way of getting paid for his lost wine. So Amru le, and then these porters go say to Rav, Aniye Anat, we're poor men. Dachina Kulyama, we worked all day schlepping these wine barrels, but Kafina, and we're hungry, but lately in midday, and we have nothing to eat. Right? He didn't pay us for all the work we did. Amarle, so Rav says, Barbara Hanan, Zila Habagra, you know, you got to give them their wages. Amarle, so Rabbi Hanan says, wait a minute. They didn't do the work. I hired them to move the barrel, and all they did was destroy all my merchandise. Dina Hachi, is that really what the law is? Amarle, in. And then Rav says back to me, yeah, that's what you have to do. It says, Orchot Tzadikim Mishmor, that's Orchot Tzadikim, that's the way of the righteous. That's what you need to do. And as 11th continues, it is no doubt this pity which the Gibarites lacked, in the sense of not willing to give on what is demanded of giving on any kind of sense of justice. Say, no, we don't need the full, you don't have to kill somebody. Because I have the impression that I have come back to the theme evoked by Mr. Jankelevich when he opened this colloquium. Remember, he's talking to a group of French intellectuals in the aftermath of World War II, talking about how do we respond to the Germans in the 1950s? What do we demand of them? Yeah. Right? The world has to go on. The Holocaust is real. And so he's saying, we've come back to this original question here, even though no one in this hall has asked that the descendants of our tortures be nailed to the rocks. We're not the Givonim, but still, we have to go beyond that. The Talmud teaches that one cannot force men who demand retaliatory justice to grant forgiveness. That was the first point. The victims have the right to say, this is what justice demands. It teaches us that Israel does not deny this imprescriptible right to others. But it teaches us above all that if Israel recognizes this right, it does not ask it for itself. And to be Israel is to not claim it. That's what his bottom line is, to say that we cannot go back and demand absolute revenge. We can't torture the Germans. We can't demand that they all be killed. And when Israel fails to have this rachamim, then in fact Israel ceases to exist. This is the Gemara continues on that. Asher yasun zu lefnim mishrat adin. Yeah, this is what they should do. We tell that Hashem tells you, you should tell Bnei Yisrael what they should do. That's doing this to Frimush Adin, going accepting within the line of the law. There are Yochanan. Yochanan adds Lo Charba Yush, and the same Rabbi. The same Rabbi Yochanan as last as the Givanim. Lo Charba Yushalayim. Yushalayim was destroyed for the simple reason Ela Al Shadanu Badin Torah, because they. They demanded the rule of the law of the Torah. They did Din Torah. That's why it was destroyed. Dina Megazita Dinaihu. Wait. When did they? They Gemara says they did the Torah law. I mean, what are they supposed to do? The law of some strange, some other nation they're supposed to use? No. Elanema Sheemidu Din Al Din Torah. No, because they demanded what they was coming to them in the court cases. And they did not allow for this Rufim Rishurat Adin. That's why Yerushalayim was destroyed. So you need that, Adarash Yasu, so they should inherit the land. If they don't do that, they cannot. They don't get the land, and so too the Givonim, because they demanded this. They're not part of Bnei Yisrael at all. And I'm going to stop here, because I'm going to continue on with this other side of it. So we need to have justice. We can't demand justice. Where do we go from here? And now we're going to talk a little bit more of the idea of reparations.
And Danny, what about warning them?
I'm sorry?
What about giving them warning before they made their decision?
Warning to give on them about that?
Well, like if somebody's going to kill, aren't you supposed to call out and say, don't do that?
Yes.
So here, they're asking something that in the long run, it's going to basically work against them, but nobody warns them that if they take...
No. I mean, the description is talking to them. I don't know what that talking was. You know, David Shirley was talking to them beforehand about what they demanded. I assume that was part of it. No, don't do this. You know, they say, no, we don't want money. That was what they're saying, here, take money, take riches.
So that was part of the conversation.
You know, that's implied in the text that was part of the conversation, that what they're demanding is wrong.
Okay.
So I'm going to stop here. Have a Gemar Chatima Tova.
Chatima Tova to everybody.
Gemar Chatima Tova.
And Danny, thank you for your teaching all of the year.
Okay. Yep. And next time, we'll have to see when we get this next time. We got Erev Yontif next Sunday, and away the week after that. We'll get back at some point.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
So,
bye-bye.
Bye.